This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine and with Macca and Tass, and Macca crapping on in the background as he usually does.
You're a sanctimonious old windbag.
Ha, 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 says one to the other.
Who have we got now?
We have Paul Gover.
But we've also got Mark Hawthorne in the studio as well.
We certainly do. Resplendent, looking resplendent in a suit.
Off to the races, gentlemen. Hello, everyone.
So we've got Fairfax dressed up in a suit and Gover probably free-balling in his tracky decks.
No, not tracky decks. Shorts. Got shorts on today.
Shorts. Now, the both of you can talk about motoring because you're both actually passionate. Mark's going to talk about something Fairfax is doing as well, but I wanted Paul first, Holden, this Friday. That's it. Kaput. Closed. Manufacturing
gone. Yep. Yes.
Should have been saved. I said it at the time. Should have been saved. And if you think about we're investing money in, from aluminium to smelting to other things, far less productive to our economy. I think it should have been saved and could have been saved.
It would have been saved. What went wrong was that Kim Carr, who was the industry minister who was putting together a rescue package, because they all, like the people on the Titanic, they knew they were going to lose the election, and he got punted to the outer ministry during the kerfuffle with the leadership over his party, and by the time he got back, it was too late to get the deal done.
And I think it's a story that a lot of people don't think is relevant, but it actually is, because it actually tells why, and over the next few weeks it'll come out, why it happened. But, you know, why are we investing tens and tens of billions of dollars in a French submarine that is nuclear, that they're going to convert to diesel electric, and it's going to be built in Adelaide, and it's going to create about 1,000 jobs for a few years? Like, what's the point of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And how many of them are there, and what's the benefit to the training people for Australia and our general prime and in the world economy? I mean, the thing about this is, I mean, it's sad now, but it's really, really sad in 10 years' time when you've got somebody who wants to be an engineer, you know, and they can't, or a car designer, and there's no part.
But to that end, Paul, on Friday afternoon, the 70-year-old Society of Australian Automotive Engineers, and you probably know more than anyone the quality of some of the individuals who have come through Australia's automotive industry, have gone to work around the world. It went into liquidation and receivership on Friday.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. The whole thing is just plain horrible. And really, apart from, we all stand around and say, oh, isn't it sad these people are losing their jobs? Oh, dear, oh, me, here's your money. And in case of Holden, here's a nice commemorative book. But I don't think we'll know the full impact for quite some time to come. You know, you look at the number of supply companies, people like Heller, you know, who go from being a manufacturer to being a reseller of driving, you know, lamps.
So we've got two learned gentlemen here in the studio. So what is the impact of this? What's the impact? Obviously on jobs, but
the ripple impact on jobs is in the tens of thousands. It's not just the few thousand direct workers who have lost their jobs in the past month at Holden, Toyota and Ford last year. As Paul was saying, the supply chain, the other companies that profited from having that capacity it's in the tens of thousands.
People moving stuff around for these factories.
Yeah, trucking industry, that's right.
You know, everywhere you look, if you walked into a car company assembly line, and most people never do it in their life, but it's an amazing thing. But you look at the logistics planning, trucks, then you've got all the manufactured bits that you need to do this. So you've got people stamping pieces of steel. Oh, okay, so somebody's got to make steel so that we can stamp it to put it in the car. Somebody's got to get the plastic to make the component to put in the car, you know. It's all of that sort of stuff, and all of these things. So, in the case of, say, Toyota, when they're developing these things, they get the local supplier, they take them to Japan, they take their engineers, they induct them into the Toyota process of how the quality is done, how the design's done. That knowledge then comes back to Australia. You know, those people have been not just trained in Australia to do the job, but in a lot of cases, the company takes them to their headquarters overseas and they learn the process there. The knowledge gets lost, the jobs gets lost. You're right, the knock-on effect is tens and tens of thousands of people. And really, like, I've got an 8-year-old son if he wanted to work in the automotive industry, that's a closed shop now. He won't be able to do that. And, you know, and they say, oh, it's wonderful, you know, we're going to be the smart economy, we're all going to do software. Well, the whole world's doing software.
We're all going to be baristas.
Yeah, it's a barista, yeah. Barista-led revival of our economy. And most of those jobs are Victorian. Sorry to be a bit parochial. Yeah. PPP Advisory, very good Melbourne firm, did a piece of work about 4 years ago. They estimated 25,000 to 30,000 jobs, and the majority in Victoria. And wow. It's really tough parts of Melbourne too. It's Broadmeadows, it's the inner west, it's those parts of our city where the jobs are going to go.
With the guys, with the Society of Automotive Engineers changing after, or closing after 70 years, think about the impact of that. Whilst Ford and Holden and Toyota are going to continue to employ a reasonably significant number of engineers and designers, it won't be at the level that they have in the past. And they're going to be working on product that predominantly is not sold here.
Correct.
It's for their world parents.
Let me throw this out to you. What about the argument, market forces? The market will decide what will survive and what won't survive.
Look, yes, but my issue is that our government's used that so selectively. I mean, we have a government that wants to nationalise just about everything at the moment. We have a Liberal government that wants to nationalise just about everything at the moment, and they're being selective. All right, if market forces dictate that, don't subsidise roads, don't subsidise trains. I mean, we live in a world where we need major industry to be subsidised.
Well, Kim Carr came out today, and said they're putting together a package to go to the next election with billions of dollars of incentives for investment in, manufacturing. Today, you know, the week that they're closing the thing down. Now, he's saying it's not grants, it's loans and things. But, I mean, in the case of car making, they were getting subsidised, but they were getting subsidised only if they actually spent money themselves.
They had to match $3 for every $1. They had to match it.
Yeah.
The companies.
You know what I mean? But the fact of the matter is, car making is very expensive. Yes, you're right. Market forces, the whole world went to SUVs, and we were building big locally produced, you know, passenger cars. But, I mean, the Ford Territory was a brilliant car. Mm. Should have been exported. What happened there? The problem with these things is you end up with companies that they appear in interest. You know, Holden never exported the Commodore when they clearly could because the unions in America didn't want it. You know, the Territory, same sort of problem. And if you think that these jobs at Ford and Holden are protected going forward, no, they're not. You know, it's great while they've got a local manufacturing arm to hang it off the side. And yes, there are a lot of people here, but there's no long-term commitment from those people to actually have those engineers here. They could turn around tomorrow and say, we're moving it to India because it's cheaper. Mm. Do you want to go or do you want to stay?
Now, something on a more positive note, Paul. You were at Bathurst last week.
I was indeed.
Probably the last race of the big bangers, because six-cylinder turbos will be in next year in different body styles. So how was it?
It was fantastic. It's no longer a showroom sort of race. It's now an entertainment thing. And there will still be big bangers next year. Everybody next year pretty much will still have V8 engines. But even those V8 engines come from Chevrolets and American Fords. It's an entertainment thing. What I like about Bathurst these days is that it's become a big family event. A couple of groups of my friends are up there, and they sort of got up on Wednesday and camped all week, and they enjoyed the race because it's a bit like the AFL or NRL Grand Final. It's a major event, except you get to go there and camp. Be in Bathurst for sort of the better part of a week.
Well, that's an irony, because I've been to Bathurst and I can assure you it was not a family event when I attended. And I can assure you that after Richmond won a grand final down here, the streets of Richmond looked like Summernats than a family event.
I've been to Summernats too. That was never a family event. But what they've done with Bathurst in the last probably 5 years, they've really cleaned it up. I mean, I can remember racing up there one year, and I saw this huge pool of black smoke, and I got on the radio and said, "Does somebody had a crash? What do I have to do?" And they said, "Don't worry, they're just burning cars again."
Yes.
I mean, they used to burn cars. They used to go, you know, they used to go up there weeks before the event, and they had a one slab a day rule for beer per person.
But people would go up a few days beforehand and bury them.
Yeah, and then pitch their tent over the top of where they buried the stuff. They knew exactly where to bury. That doesn't happen anymore, honestly. I have some female friends who went up there on the weekend. I know you find that hard to believe. Friends, I said, not relations. In fact, David Reynolds, the guy who won the race, who's a lovely bloke, his girlfriend, she went for a run up there on the Saturday afternoon. And she said, yeah, okay, there were people heckling and carrying on, but it wasn't unpleasant and it wasn't dangerous or anything, whereas in the past I would have said, do not go up on top of the mount as a female at all.
So, Paul, enough of that. I'm going to change the subject to things that are much more interesting. And it would be remiss of me not to ask you this, but give us an update on the driverless vehicle.
Ah, driverless vehicle, what a joke.
Changed your tune on this then?
No, I haven't changed my tune at all. I mean, the driverless vehicles will come, but I'll be dead by then, by the time. Look, all these people are saying, you know, we're all going to have driverless cars and they're all going to be powered by battery electric vehicles. Point one. The number of, in the whole world, last month, BMW sold 10,000 electric cars in the whole world. By the time, you know, electric cars are going to take forever to get over, and there isn't enough lithium in the ground to make the batteries to electrify the whole vehicle fleet. In terms of your autonomous driving cars, there are cars now which can assist you in lots of ways, and in some controlled circumstances they can drive. But as soon as you get them interacting in the real world with ordinary people and stuff, the whole thing goes pear-shaped. Because I'll give you one example. An autonomous car sees an orange light, it's going to brake and stop. How's that going to go down in Melbourne? You know, they're all going to be crashed out in the first week by people who are not paying attention or who think that an orange light's an excuse to change down a gear and speed up. The actual transition, the technology will be there, and it'll be there in 5 to 10 years. But in terms of adoption of the fleet, it's going to take so long to get these sort of cars into the hands of the majority of the general public. We're talking 20, 30 years at least.
Until we as a society can accept that an autonomous car mowing down a teenager on headphones walking through a red light is an act of natural selection, we will not have them.
Yes. Natural selection.
Well, the other thing is, we were having this discussion the other day. So imagine you're in your fully autonomous car and it's making all the decisions. And the choice is, it can kill you or it can kill a lady with a lady pushing a pram beside the road. I can tell you, in Sweden, it's going to kill you. I can tell you, in India, it's going to kill the people with the pram, because the paradigm's different around the world, you know, the value of life. So apart from anything else, you're going to have all of this different programming, all these different legal things for all of these countries around the world. Like, it's just a minefield. The actual technology is terrific, wonderful, marvellous. You know, they can push a button and you know, Tesla can tell you they can drive across America right now, hands-free. But that's in absolutely perfect conditions, one-off. It's definitely not mainstream motoring.
Take the wind out of my sails again. I was so looking forward to it.
I think in our lifetime...
It's going to be, you know, the man came up to me and said, this is going to be great. I can go to the pub and the car can drive me home when I'm finished.
Yeah,
never. But I think there'll be a time where you might be able to drive to the Eastern Freeway and your car says, do you want me to take over?
Yes.
And you'll say yes, and it'll drive you to the end of the freeway and says, you have to take over, we're exiting now. I think that will
be correct. Yeah, but the people from the EastLink will tell you, they've done a survey now, and they say that, you know, some huge percentage of people want to be, you know, want autonomous cars and they want electric cars and they want this and the other thing, but that's the people who are applying to a survey that's already skewed that way, because it's all the questions are about positive messages. There's no, do you want this, do you not want this? So the people who get involved in the survey skew the result because they're all...
And there's a $500 prize. Yeah. Here's $500 prize, mate.
If you complete the survey.
You complete the survey.
Affirmatively.
Man. You go into the draw. You don't get points, but you get money.
How many times did you complete the survey?
Well, 14. So thank you, Paul. We're going to dump you because we're going to continue talking to Mark.
Yeah, well, he's much more interesting than me, so that's fine.
But once again, thank you, and we'll have you back on again soon. We did have a bit of a gap there, but we'll have you back on regularly because it's always popular.
Okay, sounds good, Mac.
Good idea. Thanks a lot.
Have a good one.
See you, Paul.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.